Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. Happy to have y'all here. I'm Trevor Lade. He's Pete Zayas. Jovan Buha is on vacation. And Pete, you just knew Jovan went on vacation and then dead silent. Nothing going on around the Lakers whatsoever, right?
What are we going to talk about today, Trev?
I have no idea. There's just nothing to get into. My goodness. Family drama around the Lakers. The team getting sold. We talked about that a little bit last week, but now we've got the Buss family, five of the six Buss kids anyway, trying to sell their share of the team. Jeannie Buss saying not so fast. Oh, my goodness. Always something going on around these Los Angeles Lakers. We're going to dive into it. We'll be taking your questions and comments coming into the chat as well. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button over on the YouTube channel. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Pete, I guess let's just dive headfirst into this thing. What do you make of this whole situation? By now, I would imagine most folks watching the show have a pretty good sense of what's going on. Where do you stand with all of this craziness that seems to be swirling around this team?
There's so much to unpack with all of it, but the first thing that my mind goes to is Jeannie is the governor of the Lakers, mm-hmm. which has a number of official responsibilities, but none of the main players involved with the Lakers, aside from her, appear to want to have her in that role, right? Like, you've got five of the six kids, like you said, looking to sell, which would mean that they wouldn't own the 15% necessary for her to be able to do that. That was agreed to on the previous deal, but that's the NBA's rule, right? Is that owner has to own at least 15% for that to happen. And so yesterday was just crazy watching it play out. I hope you had your popcorn. It was like, you know, what was that first statement too? It was like, hey, let's exit gracefully.
Yes.
We still can. Like, talk about ominous, right? And then Lord knows we get that letter later that I don't know if you read all of that letter mm-hmm. from her lawyer, but shots fired at Jesse and Joey for leaking information to
and Shams. Shams.
For years and years. Yeah, and Shams too, right? Just wild stuff that we'd always heard sort of rumblings of this, and this is something I've talked about sort of Jeannie being very like, I do not like leaking, and she felt like Jesse and Joey were kind of guilty parties of that, but we'd never seen it quite this out in the open like that. And so my first thought is like, are we really going to have a governor of the team that doesn't seem like anybody involved wants her to do that? Because the other side of the deal, who were they selling it to? Kushner and Iger, right? And like, it seems like that's probably a role that Iger wants. Does he want to wait till he's 79 years old to really run the Lakers? I don't think so. So like, what does this mean for our Lakers? What was your reaction?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned an ominous bit there that was in the letter. When we talked last week with Bob Iger, it was Kobe Price did a great job getting that quote, like, hey, it was something to the effect that we intend to honor mm-hmm. the agreement between Mark Walter and Jeannie Buss, but if things change, then they'll change. That didn't sound like a strong vote of approval there. And I think you're absolutely right. I think when people spend the kind of money that you're going to spend in order to purchase an NBA team, you want to be able to run that NBA team. So while Jeannie Buss may have had 4 years remaining on the agreement with Mark Walter, is that now out the window? And then she would no longer be the governor. Again, if the tag-along provision is indeed executed here and the other Buss kids, five of them, sent signatures to Jeannie saying, hey, we're planning on selling this thing. Your vote isn't going to matter because we're the majority here. If that is ultimately what goes through, then she's removed from her mm-hmm. position. Now, there's also a little bit of, you know, turnabout is fair play here, and that she removed them, most of them anyway, yes. from their roles with the Lakers. So, Pete, but where I ultimately land with all of this stuff, everything going on, because people are, you know, taking sides. They're on Jeannie's side. They're on the other Buss kid's side. They're, you know, where does all this... This sucks for the Lakers, yes. man. For the Lakers as an organization, for the Lakers fans, for the team on the floor. The guys are what? I mean, we're hours away from the guys heading to Slovenia for Camp Luka, right? I mean, that's coming up. Like, and that's the stuff that fans really care about. That's the stuff that fans really buy into, right? It's not that fans don't care about the Buss kids or Jeannie or anything like that. There's certainly an attachment there to all of that, but for the Lakers as an organization, for the Lakers as a brand, none of this is a great look. None of this is a great look. And I just hope that sooner rather than later, we can emerge from all of this looking much more stable and competent, because this right now, Pete, this is a mess.
It is. And I think it exposes a certain dynamic that's actually been there for quite some time. Right. And that, you know, when I joined the Lakers, I was a big Buss family stan. I grew up on Jerry Buss, the greatest owner in professional sports history for my money. And when I left, and long before I left, I was like, oh, they need to sell. And it was not because I had something against any of them individually, but they're so factional. And remember when Magic quit and he was like, I've got Tim Harris talking to me about this and Joey and Jesse wanted about that like, the NBA is so competitive just to begin with that at least you need your leaders rowing in the same direction. And I think that speaks to your point about, like, whoever's side you take, this is bad. It's bad. And it exposes that dynamic that's been there for a long time where it's like Jesse and Ginny and Joey Ginny didn't get along with the younger Buss boys. There was some, rivalry between Pelinka and them and all of that. It's like, how are you going to win in a super competitive NBA if that's what you've got going on amongst your leadership?
Yeah, you can't. I mean, that's the bottom line. You have to have everybody pulling in the same direction. And there can be, look, I'm a big believer in getting a lot of different voices in the room and having those conversations and having differing opinions. But ultimately, you all have to be moving in the same direction together as a unified front. And very clearly, that's not the case. And I don't want to go, bit by bit through everything that we've seen over the years, from the firing of Jim Buss to what happened with Joey and Jesse to, you should have never been born and all these different things, right? There's so much stuff that we can get into here with this family drama. But I'll tell you, the sad part is I have to think back to the late, great Dr. Jerry Buss. This can't be what he was hoping would happen here. This can't be what he had in mind for how this organization was going to run here moving forward.
Certainly not. But Trevor, I know you were a teacher back in the day. Yep. And, throughout history, whenever the king passes away and leaves his kingdom to all of his kids instead of one of them, and it's like, you're going to be the governor of this province and you're going to lead that province, what always ends up happening? They go to war with each other. And that's what ended up happening here. I was saying this earlier. I think that the way the trust is set up was well-intentioned for sure, but I think it's sort of a underrated villain in all of this, in that I think that it's really fostered a lot of the factionality that's been there. And it's like, I think it's just time to move the page. I understand that this is not what Jeannie signed up for when she was trying to sell the team to Mark Walter, but you mentioned the tag along provision earlier. Can you explain? Neither of us are lawyers, of course, but can you explain at least a little bit of what you know of what that is and how that applies to this situation?
Yeah. And my understanding is that the tag along provision would allow, with the majority sale of Mark Walter's share, would allow the Buss kids to take their 17.8% share and say, oh yeah, we like that valuation. We're going to throw our hat in the ring here too. We're going to sell our share in addition to what's going out with Mark Walter, and we'll create it as part of that deal as well. So Iger and Kushner would then purchase that. They would own, the vast majority of the Lakers at that point. So it's the ability of this other deal is already being created, and then they can say, yeah, we'll join in on that, and they can hop in on the deal and sell their shares as part of it as well. And that's what they are attempting to do, with the idea being that five of the six of them have already voted yes to sell. Apparently, there was a previous vote where they didn't get that kind of a majority, but that has now changed with the $12.5 billion valuation. They got five of the six votes. They presented them to Jeannie, and Jeannie has said, doesn't matter if five of you have voted to sell. I don't want to sell, so we're not going to, because I'm still the controlling owner. And that's where now we've got a battle that's about to take place.
It's stressful. And, it can impact even the sale of the team in the first place. I don't think it will. I think these are ultimately, minority owners at this point that are wrestling over that. But like I said earlier, she's the governor of the team. So what do you view as sort of the implications of this?
Yeah, that's the thing, right, Pete? I mean, if she was not the governor of the team,
right?
There would still be interest in this because it's the Buss family and they've owned the team since 1979 and all of that. It would still be interest in it. But the fact that she's in a position of power with the organization makes this all the more important that this get resolved and resolved relatively quickly and as cleanly as possible, one way or another. They need to resolve this because she is in that governor role right now, which is an important one with the team. And so if this were just any other minority owner in this situation, we would just say, well, okay, they have a minority stake. They don't really have a lot of a voice anyway. But in that governor role, it's pretty important that the Lakers figure this thing out, or that all of the legality of this gets sorted out sooner rather than later. I think when we look at what could wind up happening here, is this could put a stall on any kind of changes that Kushner and Iger want to impact, because they don't know who's going to be the governor of the team. It's going to be difficult as it is to build out what they want with training camps starting up in, what is it now, 6 weeks, something like that. We're going to have them on the floor for preseason games really soon here. And we still don't have an assistant general manager for the Los Angeles Lakers right now, or at least one of them not in place right now. Is that vision that Mark Walters set forth for the front office, is that going to continue along the same path? Are there going to be tweaks to that? There's a lot of things already that have to be figured out on the fly. Now you add into this, there's uncertainty about who the governor is going to be, how much of the team is actually going to be sold in this deal. That's the concern for me, is I hope, Pete, that none of this bleeds into the team itself when they actually step onto the court and start playing basketball games.
That's my hope as well. Although, as I think through the how of that, how are they going to be able to do that? I guess the most optimistic take I can have is that I'm hard pressed to believe, like you were saying earlier, that Iger is buying the team so that he can wait until he's 79 years old to be the guy who runs it. That I wonder if there's a way for her to be sort of the governor in name only, but Iger's the guy who runs the show. And like, I'll be pretty shocked with any outcome that doesn't end with Iger sort of running things. And this is a place where Adam Silver needs to step in, and there needs to be that sort of clarity. This has potential to become a really tangled mess that does impact the team as they step onto the floor and just sort of the moves going forward. Like you brought up the assistant general manager, that could be a big part of the explanation of why they haven't made those moves, right? Is, you know, we're always going to be the last to know about this, but how long have they known that Walter has been not only under investigation, but in a place where it's like, oh, he's probably going to have to sell certain things? And then do you hire upper management at that point, when there's going to be a new owner anyway? And Iger is pretty famous for being a very hands-on type of CEO. Like, I don't think it's going to be just just keep doing things the way that you guys have been doing them. I think he's going to want to enact his vision, which is his right. And so there's just so many hurdles for that to happen. And that if there's a legal battle with Jeannie and the, you know, her siblings, and then also there's the other end of that deal is Iger and Kushner. And so do they get dragged into this as well? Like, you really need the commish to step in and establish some degree of order.
If I'm Bob Iger, it pains me to say this, I want the buses gone. I would want a clean break. I would just want a clean break, wipe the slate clean, start from scratch, because this is a mess. It would be different if this was like this easy transition and Jeannie's got all these great contacts around the league and it's going to make everything smooth and all that. That's not what this is right now. If I'm Bob Iger, my ideal path is I'm buying the bus of shares and I'm getting them out of the picture here, because this is getting way too messy, and I want to start the page on a new era of Lakers basketball.
Amen.
And again, Pete, you and I both, like, the Buss family is the only ones we've ever known. It's all we've known. That, you know, owning the Los Angeles Lakers. So again, it really does pain me to say that, but I think they do need a fresh start here at this point, and hopefully that can lead to an era of stability, because that's certainly what you need at the top of an organization. You need stability there moving forward. All right, we're going to get into a lot of different things. We're going to be taking some of your questions, some of your comments as well. But first, let's give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is SeatGeek.
So I'm moving to Florida in a few weeks, and a couple of weeks after that, it's my girlfriend's birthday. She loves live music, so I want to take her to a concert, but I've never been to any of the venues out there, which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout-out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. Major League Baseball is in full swing, and you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. SeatGeek has a great feature that rates these tickets on a scale of 1 to 10, with the green meaning that it's a better deal, and the red meaning that it's a worse one. This helps me out a ton looking for the best tickets at venues I've never been to before. Plus, every ticket is backed by the buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with the promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure to click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek.
All right, Pete, one thing before we jump into the chat here that I wanted to mention is, do you see a world where perhaps the bulk of this deal goes through, where the purchase from Mark Walter, because there is some, he's the investigation, everything else that's going on there, there's urgency on his side, apparently, to get this done and get this all settled before the end of the year. Do you see it where perhaps the meat of the deal, the Mark Walter selling his majority share, could go through while the Buss family drama is still trying to be resolved with that remaining 17.8%?
I think you're spot on with that. I think that's the easiest and cleanest way to do this. And to your point about the investigation with Walter, apparently part of that is that he's got to square his books, which are about $20 billion off right now. he's got to square that by December 31st. And so we're in the middle of August right now. That's not a long time to make $20 billion appear in the right ledgers that they need to. And so if there's any fight, and it sounds like there's going to be, then I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, he can't wait for the rest of this to get sorted out. All right, Luka Doncic got promised a contending roster and got this. You know, I we talked about it last week. I loved Luka's statement right after the ownership change was announced. I love that Luka's bringing the team to Slovenia. Luka seemingly on board with all this. I have to wonder if part of this is Luka's just like, whatever, man, just give me a basketball and get me on the court. Like, he's been through, I forget who had it, but mentioned Luka, I think it was Mark Stein, said Luka has been through, I think it was something like five ownership groups in the last, you know, few years or something. Luka's just probably like going, here we go again. Yep. Here we go again.
Yep. So it's Cuban, Adelson, Buss, Walter, and now Kushner-Iger are the five. And that's in a very short period of time. That between that and just the timing of the trade, like, everybody was so gobsmacked that they traded him in the first place that I don't think a lot of people looked at it from Luka's point of view, but they were right at the precipice, right? They had just made the finals, and that was supposed to be the beginning of a run for Luka, that he joins a team that's not ready. They were pointing their guns toward the summer of 26, and this is sort of year one of that. But in reality, for Luka, it's year three, and he's what, 28 years old now, or about to be. And there's been so many false starts for him that I feel bad for him being caught up in all of that. And I hope that that's one of the many reasons the Lakers really need the waters to stabilize. Is from what everybody says about Luka, and this is, you know, that's what he said in his statement as well. He's a very, like, I want to stay with the team that I'm with and build something and grow roots. I don't think he's looking to hop from one team to the next. But nonetheless, like, he's behind in terms of the being able to do that. For somebody who wants to build roots, it's been a remarkable confluence of circumstance that's really prevented him from doing that into his late 20s.
Yeah, and he is 2 years away, 2 summers away from free agency, really. And that could certainly matter. You know, if the Lakers go to Luka next summer and say, hey, so what are you thinking for your next contract? And he goes, well, I don't know, I might look around. Pete, we could be a year away from talking Luka trades. Like, that's not where I expect to be. That's not where the Lakers want to be. That's the reality of the situation. He's going to have that kind of power as soon as next summer to influence a new landing spot if he doesn't feel like the team is moving in a positive direction. So that's going to certainly add even more urgency for the Lakers to figure out life very, very quickly and get things sorted. Looking at the team, though, the actual team that they've assembled, do you think, with this comment saying Luka got promised a contending roster and got this, do you think they're at least on the right track to building a contending roster?
I think they're on the right track. I don't know how far down that track that they are. My standard for has been contention next year and the next couple of years after that. I don't think that with the amount of change that needed to happen, basically, to put it simply, I don't think you lose LeBron and become a championship contender in the same summer. But they need to be that by next year. And so that, like, the forward spot that we've talked so much about is really crucial within this and landing that. I think that I think all of their signings pretty much have to work out. Like, one of the things that you look at for championship rosters is they get undervalued contracts and contributions from somewhere, right? Yep. And this Lakers team, like, you hope for Adu and Carr, but these are kind of role players that, like, you don't even know if they're going to be in the rotation, and much less being, like, significant starter caliber players anytime soon. And so they've got work to do. They've got work to do to be able to get there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that stylistically, they've made some good choices here. But like you said, you have to have guys that are on value contracts. And I didn't, infamously, I was not a big fan of the contracts that were given out. Like, the players didn't like the contracts that were given out. So you've got to get guys that are providing value above what their contracts are actually suggesting they would be at. And so who do you look to for that? I mean, I felt like Quentin Grimes, Sandra Mamukelashvili, you know, the Walker Kessler, all these guys got paid, as much as I like all of them individually, got paid at kind of top of market for their value, at least what I perceived their market to be. And so now you're going to have some of those guys either drastically exceed your expectations, whether that's Kessler, Grimes, you know, whoever, or some of the other guys on your roster that step up and are able to provide that. And we'll see if that ultimately happens or not. There's also something to the pieces coming together on the floor. Can they be greater than the sum of their parts? And some of this we won't be able to know until they actually get out on the floor. We get into the meat of the season and we start figuring out what this team is and isn't. But right now, this Lakers roster as presently constructed, I do think they're on the right track, but there is still work to be done. And sometimes doing that work can be difficult when behind the scenes, you don't know who's calling the shots today versus who's going to be calling the shots tomorrow. So that's why this is all, you know, interconnected with what's going on with the ownership side of things and where this team ultimately needs to go. Like, could this even give free agents or potential targets reason to balk at the idea of becoming a Laker if they're not sure if the person who's selling them on the vision for the team today is going to be executing that vision tomorrow? That's where this all gets messy and complicated and why they need to sort things out pretty quickly so they can continue on this path and hopefully build that contending team that Luka certainly wants.
That's one of the things that I saw as a silver lining is I'm glad the Lakers summer for the most part was handled before any of this stuff went down. And one question for you, Trev, before we move on, what would be sort of the signposts for you of them? They're on the path. They're on the right track. Like, I don't think that either of us have a they're going to win the title this year expectation, but that was the whole point of this summer, is to build that contender, and the clock is ticking with Luka. So what would be some signs for you that they're, like, at least, like, on the right track?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, and this is to a degree an intangible, but the first thing that I think of, because people will immediately point to record, I want to know what's the vision. What is this team? I want to see some type of plan for this team coming together. And the team that I always think of is last year's Phoenix Suns. You know, we went into the season saying the Suns are not going to be very good. They're going to be one of the worst teams in the NBA. And then once they got out on the floor, we went, oh, okay, they're playing this ultra aggressive defensive brand of basketball. They're going to pressure a bunch on the wings, and they're going to be a bit better than anybody expected. Now, stylistically, we know what this team is trying to be. We know what the vision is, and they're adding pieces to that. Not that the Suns are a contending team. I'm just saying that there was a clear plan in place. They executed that plan, and they were able to be better than the sum of their parts because of the execution of that plan. That's what I want to see from this Lakers team. I want to see JJ Redick gets a hold of this group. You've got these different skill sets than what he's had access to before. If we can get to a point where we say, okay, we know what it is the Lakers are trying to be, and they are very clearly taking steps towards being that kind of team. And you can see, hey, if we add this wing player, this would further us along as this type of team. That's what I want to see. What is the vision on the basketball court for this club? How stylistically are they going to play? How is JJ Redick going to mold this team into something that's better than the sum of their parts? And that's not as concrete of an answer as saying, you know, I want to see them win 55 games or what have you. But I want to have a sense of what it is that this team wants to be. What is the path they want to go down in order to be a contending team? I think that's going to be important, developing that identity. How about you? What do you see? What are you looking for?
It's almost a vibe. It's like a, you know, really good
team. Intangible again. Yeah.
It's like this team's really got something, you know what I mean? And that they're a player away. I want to feel like they're close, and it's, they can't be a, what's the over under right now, 45 and a half or something like that. Like they, it can't be a 45, 46 win team when it, unless there's like some severe injuries. But that whole idea that they had a whole summer to really put together the team that they wanted to put together, I think this is a, sort of a synthesis between the type of players that Luka wants to play with and then the type of players that JJ Redick wants to coach. And I think this is the first roster where Redick's sort of gotten to pick rather than just work with what he's had, that if all of that lands with a mid high 40s win type of team when they're, you know, accounting for injuries, if that's where it lands, that's not close enough. So it's got to be the type of team that when they are healthy, they're like, oh yeah, this is a really good team. They're not quite there yet, but like, it's, we got to feel close.
Agreed. They got to feel close. They got to be right there to being in the mix. In the words of Sliwa, Lake Show, more like shit show. It's, I mean, hey, it's not rough. Like I said, it's not a great look right now for the organization to have this kind of instability at the top. And the hope has to, and this is part of why I think if you're Bob Iger, if you're Josh Kushner, you got to be hoping that you can move on from all the Buss family drama and just run the team and hopefully bring stability with that.
I grew up on my grandmother didn't speak English, and she was always watching novellas. She loved her novellas. Mm-hmm. And I always talk about the Lakers being a novella, right? It's these like ridiculously dramatic, like, oh, I thought he was dead, and you know, he came back 5 years later. Right. And, like, just these like insane plot twists. The Lakers, it's August. We're supposed to be bored right now. And it never a dull moment.
This is another way to look. This is like WWE or something like that. Like the team is being sold. No, they're not. Now I'm back. You know that it's absolutely crazy. This person said Luka's not staying. Happened Mavs too. He is gone in 2028. I mean, he's literally saying the exact opposite, right? That he wants to stay. He loves being a Laker. All those sorts of things. Now, what matters is actually putting pen to paper when that time comes. But right now, as dramatic as things may be, if we want to put it that way, it seems like Luka is still very, very committed to this team. And hopefully it does stay that way because he's a great player. And this organization, this franchise has been built on a whole host. We are so spoiled of NBA greats, that's for sure. Pete, I just think we always love to jump to conclusions on stuff. I just think it's way too early to assume that all of this is going to blow up and Luka is just leaving in 2 years and he's gone.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And again, the people who know him best, really, like, he was devastated by the trade from Dallas. And maybe that's an argument for the, and he wants to go back. But I do think that there's just a certain degree of wish casting. However, if the Lakers are a mess over the next couple of years, like, that's probably his last chance to be the main guy. Like, his next contract is going to run him through, what, his early 30s? Mm-hmm. That's the last best chance for him to be on an NBA title winner, you know? And so I do think the Lakers need to execute. I don't think there's a, like, I don't think it's the other end of the spectrum where it's like, no, there's no way he's going to leave. Of course there's a way that he's going to leave, but I think that the idea that he's definitely gone is also wrong.
Pete, you know, I want to ask you about something because I've been noticing this a lot when I see folks talking about the Lakers. I've been getting the sense that people are forgetting how good Luka is. And I don't know how much of that is just an out of sight, out of mind thing. We haven't seen him play basketball since early April. But have you been getting the same impression? Like, when people are projecting what the Lakers are going to be, I'm seeing a lot of people that are, I think, not giving enough credit to what Luka is as a basketball player.
I totally think that's the case. I think the Lakers are also, just as a whole, viewed through a deficit model of what they are not rather than what they are. And but Luka, I mean, that March run that they went on, it was certainly a team effort, but we saw a dude score 40 over the course of a month. We saw that one other time with Kobe, right? And I think Harden did it at one other point. And of course, Wilt had his, you know, average 50 for a whole year. But in the modern era, like, that was one of the best months of basketball I've ever seen. And he was really starting to dial up in a way that he's also a playoff riser, right? Like, that's not something that's just, you know, going to happen in March or April or something like that. He can bring that into the playoffs. And so he's one of those dudes that if you put a, like, I feel like that team that went to the finals in 24, that was the first team that even had a remote chance in Dallas of going to the finals. And he took them there. They didn't go all the way, but there are some guys of which LeBron is right at the top of this, where it's like, you put a competent team around them, you've got a chance to at least make it to the conference finals or the finals. And so it was a damn shame that we didn't get to see that last year. And I do think that that is leading to people forgetting how good he is and just kind of the baseline of what he needs to be able to really contend.
That run had a very Kobe-esque familiarity to it, and that he hit so many tough shots that you just thought, well, there's no way to defend that any better, and it didn't matter. Yep. We hadn't seen stuff like that since Kobe, really, in terms of his ability to hit these just insane one leg falling away shots where the defense thinks they haven't bottled up, and next thing you know, he's scoring anyway. That was absolutely unbelievable, and it really is unfortunate that we didn't get to see that go into the playoffs, because he was incredible. He was the best player in the world at that point. Unbelievable stuff from him. Let's go here. This question here from Keon Park said, do you see Kushner and Iger as owners who will invest or just be businessmen? Walter was just a businessman. If Kushner and Iger are other businessmen, I'd rather have Genie, not sell and stay. So I think that the heart of this question is, are they going to really care about the basketball, or is this just an investment for him? What do you think about that?
Gosh, I wish I knew.
Right.
So Iger, it sounds like, is the guy who's going to be running ops, and it sounds like Kushner's more of the money guy. Again, a lot of this is based on assumption, and even that is right there. Iger is one of the most successful CEOs of all time in his business. And again, he's 75 years old. This is like, why would you do this if you're in his position, just to make a little bit more money? I don't think that's his underlying motivation. I think he wants to do something with this. This is his last sort of chance at glory and a chance to make an impact in a field that he's never been in before, but has been trying and has been a minority owner, right, as Kushner. But I think that he's in this. I don't think it's for the money at that age. I think it is for being able to do that. And with Walter and company, I don't entirely agree that they were not investing. They, you know, trying to build the recovery lab. They did hire for a bunch of different positions, including beefing out the analytics department, certainly trying to get some synergy between the Dodgers and the Lakers. So I don't necessarily agree that that's all it was for him, but I do think that part of the deal, and I think part of getting Genie to agree in the first place, as we're seeing, was conditional upon, but you're going to let us sort of run things at least for the next few years in a way that is more up in the air. But I understand the heart of this, of like, we don't want to just be another private equity chip. And that's one of the things that's been really distasteful to me about all of this, is it just feels like the Lakers are this just trade asset, this chip that's being tossed around amongst these powerful people that have to sort of like, oh, I've got this Department of Justice case against me, so I gotta, you know, get some liquid assets. And like, the Lakers as a franchise are sort of an afterthought. So I do understand sort of the discomfort with this, but I don't think Iger is looking to make money off of this in a way that I think much more of the motivation is like, I want to be great at this.
And that's where you can get a disconnect with the fans, right? Because fans, obviously, it's an emotional connection, right? It's a passion that connects you to that team. And you want to feel like ownership has that same passion, that it's not just a cold dollars and cents situation for ownership. And that's certainly the way it now appears with the Mark Walter thing. And that's, you know, we can talk about the good and the bad of the Buss family, but never had the sense, though, that they didn't care about the Lakers. Obviously, they very much the opposite. They very much care about the Lakers. And again, there's plenty of good and bad there, but they certainly care. And that's what you want to sense as well. And we don't know that. That's an unknown at this point. Yeah. We don't know if Bob Iger is going to have that. I will say, you know, Josh Kushner, his internal letter or email that was that was leaked, that mentioned that, you know, this is an investment where we're looking at, or these investments that we're getting involved in are investments where we want to measure them over decades and not years. Mm-hmm. And I thought that if you read between the lines on that, if you're investing in the Lakers and you're thinking about investing over decades and not years, well, you're going to need to win. Otherwise, you are going to devalue your own investment there.
100% with that. And that wing of Thrive Capital, I think, is called Thrive Eternal. And so that's, you know, if you read the reasoning throughout that, it is like there are these cultural touchstones that in a world that where so much is changing with AI and all of these other things, certain institutions are one of the ways that we're still going to have community. And sports franchises, especially a legacy sports franchise like the Lakers, are one of the few things that really are that eternal type of brand. But you don't keep that without being able to continue to win. And Trev, I was thinking about this earlier, like when we were growing up, we had arguably the best owner of all time. Jerry West is, for my money, the best GM of all time. We had Pat Riley and Phil Jackson as guys with solid arguments for the best coach of all time. That is something that I want the Lakers to get back to as much as they can. I don't think we're going to get that type of trifecta. And you add that to the players that you were talking about earlier. It was like excellence across the board. I understand it's a more competitive league, and we've got what, like eight champions in the last 8 years. And it might not ever be the same as it was, but I just want that like core level of competency and excellence to return.
Absolutely. And I think that starts at the top. I think that over the last, you know, a couple of decades, I think we went from a Lakers organization. When we think about the 80s, we think about the 90s, that it felt like, certainly when remember all the moves they had to make in order to free up the space to go chase Shaq. And then ultimately getting that done, wasn't it like Anthony Peeler and
George Lynch?
George Lynch, yes. They had to move off of in order to go get Shaq and make the, like, there was a sense at the time that the Lakers were just a little bit ahead of the game. Like they were a little bit ahead of everybody else. Yeah. And over the last decade plus, it's felt like maybe they're a little bit behind.
Yeah.
Maybe they're a little bit behind. I think we need to get back to a point, whatever the path is to getting there, we need to get back to a point where you see the Lakers do something and you go, oh man, yep, only the Lakers could have pulled that off. That's what I want to feel again with this club.
It's got to start with a certain organizational stability that they haven't had. It's not a coincidence that those two things coincided.
All right, let's before we get to the next question, let's give a quick shout out to our sponsor, that is Prize Picks. You guys can check them out. Use the link in the description down below, the code. It's HMA. New users play $5, get $150 if you win. Great time to go check out Prize Picks. All you got to do is pick more or less on some of your favorite players. Super easy to do, and you can mix and match sports like I did here. I did WNBA and MLB. Carlos Rodon, I went 3.5 strikeouts, said more, and then Caitlin Clark, more than 1.5 three-pointers made. That's what I went with. If you guys want to get in on it, again, the link is in the description down below. Play $5, get $150 in your lineups. If you win, incredible promo for new users. That code, again, it's HMA. Go check out Prize Picks. All right, let's get to our next question coming in here. Genie, you ruined the team. It's gone, accepted. So I've seen some of that, like Genie just needs to move on, that type of thing. We talked about how we've only known the Buss family, or like Genie has been involved with the Lakers for even longer than that. Like, I wouldn't imagine on a, obviously there's the financial side of this, there's the business side of this, on an emotional level. Mm-hmm. What an incredibly impossible thing that must be for her to step away, if that's the way this goes, from the team that she's been in a variety of roles for just about her entire life.
No doubt about that. And I've heard her speak on this and just the importance of what this all means to her. And I understand under these circumstances, she couldn't have imagined that Mark Walter would be selling the team so soon after, right? And again, I think that the sale in the first place, from her perspective, was largely conditional on at least the next 5 years being in that governorship position. And Mark Walter was a minority owner of the team too. So there was a degree of continuity that you got to figure from her perspective. It was the most graceful way for her to ever sell the team, right? I was a little surprised because that was one of my thoughts, again, from leaving the team, was that they needed to sell. But my second thought after that was like, I don't think Jenny would ever do that. This means too much to her. And if it were ever going to happen, it was going to be the way that it was with Walter. And now the table's been kind of flipped on her in a way where I don't... first off, I don't think she ruined the team. I think that there's a degree of just factionality that just within there are a lot of guilty parties within this. But yeah, man, from that emotional standpoint, like this can't be what she figured out that she was signing up for.
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly not what she was thinking it was going to be. And there, you can point out, like, hey, she got rid of a bunch of her siblings. They're turning around and turning the tables on her. I get all of that. And I'm sure it wasn't easy for any of them to be removed from their positions as well. So there's a difficult side to it as far as that goes. But I don't think she ruined the team. Have things been messy over the last decade plus? Yeah, not been quite as smooth as certainly we would have hoped. This question said, is there any point where the owners matter that it can affect you being a fan of the team, or does the work you do prevent that? I kind of look at it the other way, right? Mm-hmm. Where I like being a fan of the team is what enables the work I do, more so than the work I do is what drives me being a fan of the team.
Totally. Totally agree with that. And there's, Lord knows there are enough late nights and yes. You've got, you know, your 73 shows that you do. You wouldn't be able to do it without that love of the team and of the game. And so it's an interesting question though, of like, to what degree does ownership like impact fandom? I feel like ownership, like good ownership is it's background. Like you almost don't know that it's there in a way, but they set the environment and the course for the entire organization in ways that competent ownership shows itself up in other people more than like a direct, like whenever we saw Dr. Buss, he was playing poker or something, you know, like it wasn't like he was the guy on the banging the phones, unless it was something like, well, Kobe just demanded a trade. And
right.
Dr. Buff steps in and is like, Kobe, we're not going to trade you, but we are going to do everything that we can. And then a few months down, first off, that year started out way better than we thought it would. And then they get Powell, right? But there are certain things where the owner does need to step in. But I think a much more effective leader is a background type of character. So I think that's the question that they were asking, like to what degree does like ownership impact your fandom? Like, I don't think it does a lot directly, but it really does indirectly.
I look at good ownership is like a good referee. You don't really notice that they're there if they're doing their job right. So I agree with you 100%. John said, Trevor, you're so right. The bus drama must go, and their sidekick Rob. So we haven't talked about that yet. Start fresh and anew, Trev. Do you think that we have a chance to get Clay? Will Braun adapt to the Sixers? Your thoughts, please. Okay. I guess let's start with the thing that I really want to get into. What does all of this mean for Rob Pelinka? We already talked about it a year ago with the transition of power to Mark Walter and how sometimes people coming in to spending the kind of money that's being spent to purchase an NBA team, they want to have their own people running things, and that could be a difficult thing for Rob Pelinka. Now we've got two transitions of power, a family-level coup. I mean, Does Rob Pelinka survive all of this?
Yeah, it's certainly a question that I think is less certain than it was. Having talked to some folks, my understanding is that Pelinka and company are excited about this, and they think that it's a good thing that this has gone the way that it has. That's probably what he needs to say, regardless of how it goes. But I do think he's less safe than he was. I mentioned this in the last show that we did, but I also don't think we should underestimate his ability to survive and really ingratiate himself to the people that he needs to ingratiate himself to. You know, whether it was Kobe or Jeannie, the people who he worked for all swore by him in ways that didn't always resonate with the fans, for sure. But like a lot of times in life, if you're working for someone else, that's the only person you need to make happy. And so if he can figure out a way to do that with Iger and company, but I do think that'll have to be quick, because again, at Iger's age, I think he's going to want to hit the ground running as much as possible, and that's going to be with his people. And so Pelinka is going to have to make himself one of Iger's people very quickly.
100%. And I think one of the things that he does have going for him here is he spent the summer building this roster, right? This is his group that he has put together. Do you want to pull the plug on that before they even get onto the floor? Mm-hmm. Probably not. They want to see what this vision can actually turn into. So I think there is a world where Rob Palicka sticks around. But again, we also have that conflicting dynamic where typically new ownership wants to bring in their own people. So very much in question right now. I know that's not a solid answer, but that's because I don't think anybody knows for sure which direction this is all going to head. As far as do they have a chance to get Clay, Pete, I've been on the mindset that unless you're talking about flipping like Vando's non-expiring contract right. for Clay's expiring or whatever, I just have no interest in Clay Thompson unless it's, you know, that kind of a deal where you're shedding salary or he gets bought out. If he gets bought out, which Dallas is telling everybody who will listen, no, you have to trade for him. We won't buy him out, which is what teams do in their position. I just don't see the Lakers surrendering, or I don't think they should surrender any type of asset to go get Klay Thompson. It just would be the opposite of everything that they've done so far this summer.
Totally agree with that. And I think it's not really the need that the Lakers have at this point. I think they need a degree of athleticism on the wing that just... It was never the biggest part of his game in the first place, but at his age and experience, I think the Lakers have other needs.
As far as will LeBron adapt to the 76ers? Yes, LeBron is an incredible basketball player. He is, and his ability to adapt, he is perhaps the most malleable player that we've ever seen, maybe. I mean, he is absolutely incredible. He can do just about anything out there on the basketball court. It may take time. I think the Sixers will see some bumps in the road. I'm not going to spend a ton of time talking about him on a Lakers show. But yes, I think ultimately LeBron, the 76ers, they will figure things out.
Yep.
Exciting way to start mini camp in Slovenia. Yeah. I wonder what the conversations with the players are going to be like. If this is anything that's on their radar, is it, hey, you know, I don't care what the name of the top of the check says as long as the check clears. I wonder how much this will actually impact them.
I think at this point, especially if you're with all your boys on the other side of the world, I think that this is a very minor character for them. And there's probably some degree of, damn, this is crazy, you know, that we're all experiencing ourselves. But I don't think this really, I don't think this really impacts the players at this point that much.
Even if we see Iger getting involved on management, does he have enough knowledge and experience about pro basketball, or like Walter did, ask Buss to stay a couple of years and help with the transition? So I liked one of the things that the Bob Iger said was that they know something to the effect of they know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And that I think is absolutely critical.
It is. And now who will that be to help usher right. that in? Right. Like, cause Iger, even though he doesn't have that experience, he has been knee deep in the NBA for a very long time. He's, you know, decades of a New York Knicks season ticket holder, been longtime Clippers season ticket holder, was one of the people that put together the bubble, which again was held on a Disney campus. And, you know, there's been reporting that him and Silver are so close that they're like, we go on vacation together type of close right. friends, you know, that. I agree with the idea that like you don't have that much experience, and he spoke to that as well, but who that would be to help him in that respect, I think that he probably has options beyond Jeannie Buss.
I mean, the name that's popped up a bunch has been Chris Paul. What
Wouldn't
do you
that
think
be
about
funny? That again, the novella thing where it's like right? this, you know, that would be just the funniest, the most ironic twist is that Chris Paul finally ends up a Laker, but not the way you expect.
I was talking to Daniel Starkan with Lakers Nation last night, and was saying, man, like if you could time travel, you go back like 3 years or something and tell yourself like Luka is a Laker, LeBron's a 76er, Mark Walter owned the team, but now he does it. Like all the different things. Bob Iger is now running the like, my God, you just this crazy, wonderful, absolutely insane league that we have, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And with CP3, like he was always a guy I kind of enjoyed rooting against. I don't know if you have guys like this where you're, you know, but so there would be a certain amount of like, I gotta root for Chris Paul's success now. Like I'll do it, but it's a little Karl Malone for me.
Oh, Karl Malone.
I heard the pain in your voice.
Yeah. That season, it was, oh my God, the Lakers are going to beat everybody every single game. And then, yeah. And ran out of players in the finals. People forget there are diehard Knicks fans that absolutely hated Dolan. Jim sure. Buss and Kupchak were the worst era of the Lakers, hands down, will be okay. Yep. I mean, Luol Deng, Timofey Mozgov, right? Those deals. But, you know, it reminds me of when Joe Lacob first really took over with the Warriors, and he went and spoke before Warriors fans. This was, you know, over a decade ago, and got booed and got booed talking about the vision for the team. I don't think they're complaining right now in this moment, but we're talking about a team that was a dynasty and did all these incredible things. And in the moment, everybody was, oh no, this is awful. This is going to end up, you know, not working out at all. And people were upset. So yeah, there is that degree of it, right? Where you may not like ownership. You may think everything's going to go poorly, but it ends up being okay in the end.
I think this listener is totally right in this point. The one common thread that Dolan went in one direction, and I feel like Lacob's gone in the opposite, is that Dolan used to be a pretty meddlesome owner, at least by reputation. Yeah. And then they hired Leon Rose and company, and it seems like they've mostly gotten out of the way, at least Dolan has, in terms of the when he's not, you know, he's more busy spying on people in his arena than
that was insane.
No, man, Dolan's got some stories, man. Like, there's some turkeys owning teams around this league. And then Lacob, I think the era where they were the dynasty was, I think they let the basketball he let the basketball people more do that, where I think that one of the complaints that Warriors fans have has been, it's sort of this, remember the Bulls with Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf for like organizations win championships.
Yeah.
That was the last we heard of the Bulls, basically. It was in the late 90s. That I think that some of that old Pat Riley disease of me may have gotten into Lacob and company of like, oh, we're, you know, I've got my own vision for the team. And he became a little more meddlesome in the team. So I think this listener's got a great point that it's like, it's not the end of the world. Even if you don't like your owner, you can be very good. But I do think the common thread is that when they can get the hell out of the way and let good basketball people do their job, that's when it works best.
All right. Brent said, we just praised Genie's moral superiority with the Kawhi situation. Owner's basic principles do matter to fans. They have to defend them trash talking. And that was something that directly impacted basketball on the court, and certainly, you know, matters to that degree. But yeah, I mean, look, we see it with the Clippers, with everything that's gone on with that situation. If you get caught doing underhanded stuff, it can reflect poorly upon the organization. But like, if I were I don't know that Clippers fans are abandoning the team because Steve Ballmer may have tried to do some shady things.
Just the opposite, man. I've been looking at what Clipper fans saying. They are grabbing the pom-poms and they're down for the cause, man. It's kind of wild. It's
kind of weird though. It's, yeah, like they're like digging into the and like victory lapping, and like, you don't want this. Like, you don't want, if it's true that shady things went down, you don't want that in the NBA, regardless of what team you're a fan of. But I am seeing Raptors fans and Clippers fan. I get it. You want your team. By the way, I think the Raptors might have been saved had they had the deal not gone through. Honestly, I don't love the deal for the Raptors. I think they gave up a lot in order to get Kawhi Leonard. And so Raptors fans are celebrating getting Kawhi back. I'm like, I don't know that that's actually going to be the best thing for them. I kind of think it's not. But regardless of that, it's interesting seeing Clippers fans, Raptors fans that are like victory lapping. Oh, they didn't find anything or whatever. I'm like, I get it's your team, but I don't know if we want to get into an NBA where the salary cap effectively doesn't exist. We have a league. I compared to this, Pete. We have a league where if you are not talking deals prior to free agency beginning, you are behind. And that's one thing that we're okay with that. We know those conversations are going to happen ahead of time. We know technically it's tampering, but as long as they don't be too blatant about it, we allow teams to get away with it. I don't know if we want to get into a league where you're allowed to, you effectively have a path to funnel money to players outside of the salary cap. I think that is going way too far and can lead to some big, big problems in the future.
It gets to just the very core about sports that, like, one of the basic principles is that there is this agreed upon set of rules that we're all playing by, and may the best team win. That really starts to blur those lines.
Yeah. All right. Last one we're going to get to here. Cover the 76ers. I'm a LeBron fan and their podcasts suck. Well, look, here's the thing. I'm sure I'm speaking for you as well, Pete. I grew up a Lakers fan. I am still a Lakers fan. The earliest memory I have is of watching that's not changing. I'm not going to go follow LeBron. I will cover the entire NBA on some of my other channels, and we will certainly talk about it. And look, I enjoy LeBron James as a player. I'm not leaving the Lakers because one player leaves. Hell no to that.
I appreciate the compliment, and I appreciate the, like, you know,
very much so.
And honestly, I'm proud of Lakers coverage. This is something I was talking about the other day. I remember talking to you in 2016 and some of the other characters in Lakers coverage that, like, I think collectively I'll put our crew up against anybody. And it's in part because, like, it would have been very easy for a lot of us to view each other as competition. And I think mm-hmm. that there's just, like, there's been a lot of, like, lifting all boats over the last 10 yeah. years that I'm really proud of. And when I look at just Lakers coverage as a whole now, I'm like, I'm proud to be a part of this. And even as a fan, but also as one of the contributors. So, like, thank you for all the years following us with LeBron. Lord knows we're going to talk some Philly this year. It's going to be absolutely unavoidable, but yeah, it's Lakers for life.
Yeah, I wish no ill will. I hope LeBron has a great season, unless he's playing the Lakers. But I have no ill will towards LeBron or the Sixers or anything like that. We'll certainly talk about him and everything. But yeah, I'm not going to go jump ship and do a 76ers podcast. Nor do I think there are enough hours in the day for me to start another podcast.
You're a machine, Trev.
I can't do it. No way Iger writes checks for Jeannie if she forces her way to stay. Could bow out and still go to games or get her key card turned off if going to court. She goes to swipe in and her card yeah. doesn't work. Yeah. What do you think about that? No way Iger writes checks for Jeannie if she forces her way to stay.
I think that's one of the underlying things here is that, like, I don't think she can continue as a governor in any real role. I think that, you know, my understanding is that the agreement that she made with Walter is very likely to transfer over to Iger and Kushner, whether they like it or not. Mm-hmm. So I think that they only have, in terms of, like, writing checks to her and to whatever degree she's paid for that particular role, I don't know if that's going to be his choice in the first place, but she can't run things in any real way at all after all of this has happened.
Well, we will see where this drama ultimately goes.
Crazy.
My hope is, as much as I've enjoyed having stuff going on in August.
Not like this.
I want stuff going on in August because, oh my God, the Lakers just traded for that guy. And now their win total is projected to be like 10 more and, you know, whatever. I want that kind of stuff going on in August. Not this kind of drama. But I hope that we get some positive word out of Slovenia about Camp Luka. I hope that ultimately all of this stuff gets resolved in a reasonable way. And I hope that by the time we get to media day at the end of September, we can all just focus on the basketball. That is my genuine hope. I don't know if I'm going to get my wish, but that's my hope.
I think we'll be all right. I actually think that part I'm actually pretty excited about. I'm really excited, like, what is the new era of Lakers basketball going to look like? And I do think that this sort of, to the listener's point earlier about, you know, you can have bad owner, quote unquote, and a very successful season. I'm really excited about what this year is going to bring.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't wait. Can't wait to get the guys back out there on the court. Listen, everybody, we appreciate all of you so much for joining us here on the Lakers Collective. If you haven't done so yet, hit that subscribe button. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Pete, always a pleasure talking yes, Lakers sir. Basketball with you, and we'll do this again next week.
Let's do it.
All right, everybody. Till next time. See ya, and stay safe. Cool. All right.